Welcome to Real Life Mentoring, where we explore real life issues to help you make an authentic difference in the world.
Hi, it's Chris and Christina. We are back today with a topic called compassion fatigue. Chris, why is this important to talk about in a mentoring podcast?
Well, I think the first thing I'd like to ask you to think about as a listener, what comes to mind when you hear the words compassion fatigue? I think of things like exhaustion, tiredness, weariness, all those things. So don't be discouraged. This is an actually important topic to discuss, and it'll help you hopefully not fall into compassion fatigue as a mentor or someone who cares for other people on a regular basis.
And the reason for doing this, if you recognize this in someone you are mentoring, these are just some good tools. Yeah.
Right. And there's no shame. I have found myself, and Christina, you and I both have, We have found ourselves in the middle of compassion fatigue, and we go, how did we get here?
Right.
It does happen. So.
Yeah. So we're not psychologists. We are not professionals in the field, but this is just from our
professionals in what field, ma'am?
We are in the field of mentors. Mental health.
Yes,
right.
True.
So these are just our takeaways with 30-plus years of experience of working with people. We did do some research, and I'll start by defining, according to what Webster defines as the word compassion and the word fatigue. Compassion is sympathetic pity and concern for the suffering or misfortune of others. And then fatigue is extreme tiredness resulting from mental or physical exertion or illness. So just by that definition alone, you're like, oh, okay, maybe I can relate. But I want to give you two other definitions. This comes from the Canadian Medical Association. They define compassion fatigue, I think, brilliantly. They say it is the cost of caring for others or for their emotional pain, resulting from the desire to help relieve the suffering of others. Chris, do you see how that definition alone applies to mentors?
Very much so. Here's an example. In fact, you and I spoke about this just the other day.
Uh-huh.
I had, I think, two mentoring appointments, okay, the other day, and they were great conversations. And there was nothing negative or heavy about either mm-hmm. one of them, mm-hmm. but because we talked about such important topics in a person's life, mm-hmm. it went very deep. I left there going, I am so exhausted.
Yeah.
Now, it wasn't compassion fatigue per se, but it's leaning that direction.
Yeah.
And you reminded me, when we have those in-depth conversations like that, maybe back-to-back especially, mm-hmm. it could just take one maybe, because these were conversations which went on for maybe 2 or 3 hours apiece.
Yeah.
What happens in the brain? Did you say dopamine?
Dopamine gets released, especially when it's a good conversation,
right.
And like, oh, well, that reminds me of this. And
that
it can be a great conversation. But
the adrenaline is pumping, and you go, why am I so tired?
Mm-hmm.
And maybe I feel discouraged later that day. Well, it's because my body has utilized some important energy, and my body has to relax and get and recharged again, in a sense.
That's why I love this Canadian Medical Association definition, because it's the cost of caring. So the cost of caring in that situation, you care for this person. It was a 3-hour conversation of good things. Dopamine was released, but then your body is, and then you have another one right back to back. So, you know, 6 hours of good conversation, 6 hours of dopamine being released into your body, you're tired. And so compassion fatigue can be as a result of doing really good things, but it's still the cost of caring for someone else. Here's another definition from the Boys and Girls Clubs of America. And again, this is their context, so their definition reflects that. But compassion fatigue includes emotional, physical, and spiritual distress in those providing care to another. It's associated with providing care for people experiencing emotional or physical pain and suffering. Now, they go on to say that there's a couple of components that they attach to compassion fatigue. One is burnout, which can arise with too much work and insufficient resources to do it well. Burnout can result in increased symptoms of depression, anxiety, physical and emotional exhaustion, less enjoyment of work, more agitation. And then that secondary thing attached to the component of compassion fatigue is traumatic stress or secondary traumatic stress. So it's indirect exposure to trauma by helping others. I think we have both felt those things, but I love that it includes the emotional, physical, and spiritual distress of those providing care for others. Anything stand out with that definition as a mentor, things that you yourself have experienced?
Well, because we are a podcast focused on helping people be effective mentors. Mm-hmm. But I want to encourage you as well. This may encourage some parents. If you have a child with a sickness mm-hmm. or maybe some special needs, as a parent, you can deal with some of this, what's it called, the secondary traumatic stress.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you can have compassion fatigue that way. Maybe you have a spouse with an illness, something that's ongoing.
Yeah, I'm going to put a hard pause there because yes. we're going to talk about that later on okay. in the different ways who experiences that. So okay. let's not chase that sure. right now. But Chris, in preparing for this podcast, we talked about different times in our lives where we know that we were experiencing compassion fatigue. You want to talk about one of those?
And how I grew up. Now, again, as a child, as a teenager, I did not realize this was happening. Mm-hmm. But because my home life, there was so much dysfunction, it's what I knew.
You were experiencing secondary trauma, right?
Without even realizing
yeah.
it. So there was a lot of violence, screaming, threatening, just a lot, an ugly atmosphere growing up.
Coupled with poverty.
Yes. So I'd see my mother doing the best she could at the time, but she would be hurting, stressing. And as a kid, you don't want your mother to hurt
yeah.
and to see her stressed, to see her in tears over a situation. I would take that on myself, and it was heavy. Mm. And what it forced me to do, I don't know if I actually grew up quicker. It forced me to face adult situations that I was not prepared for, and that added to the fatigue and the stress.
Yeah.
But then as my mother got older and I got older, it continued in some ways. And again, it's like one day the light bulb comes on for me, Chris. You need to be able to help your mom and care for her, love her well. But if you take this on your shoulders and try to change things for her, you will be weighed down with compassion fatigue.
Yeah.
And it won't be healthy for you. And I saw that happen. Mm-hmm. And you did as well with
me. Sometimes we're experiencing compassion fatigue and we don't know it. Just an example, as we were putting together some material and do some research, one of the things that I realized is I think I suffered from compassion fatigue when I was 17 years old. My mother had some dramatic and traumatic health issues. It forced us in a short period of time to move countries, to move homes. I graduated from high school early, doing a whole semester of work in a few weeks.
Which on the surface can sound kind of cool, like, wow, you're a smart young person. But actually, that wasn't the healthiest thing.
No, because the backdrop was my mom's health was critical. We didn't know if she was going to live or die. They sent her back to the United States. My family, my father, my sister, and I were living in a completely different country, a third world country at that. Long story short, we were finally reunited. Problem solved? No, the problems just began. Her ongoing health struggles were traumatic, and we were experiencing secondhand trauma from her physical and mental health challenges. And I was in such a state, I look at it now, it was compassion fatigue. I felt there was no communication going on in my home. So I'm thinking, okay, so who's going to take care of our family? I guess it's me at 17, and took that upon myself. And by the end of that next year, I think had I not had certain outlets, I probably would have had a nervous breakdown.
As an older teenager?
Yeah, it was too much, yeah.
And we'll be talking about it shortly, but you and I will be able to relate to some of the signs of compassion fatigue.
Yeah.
At the time, though, sometimes when you're going through it, you may not even recognize it going,
no.
Why am I depressed? Why am I so angry? Why am I so physically tired all the time?
Yeah, why can I not sleep because my mind won't shut off?
So that's part right. of the reason we're doing this episode today is to help you recognize these things for yourself.
Yeah.
Because it's wonderful. And we're called by the Lord to help people, to give our lives away, to walk a journey with people. But we need to have boundaries.
Yeah.
And sometimes it becomes so difficult that we can be pulled into compassion fatigue.
Yeah, so if you're like me and you need a good roadmap, we just shared some stories. We're going to share another story of some signs where we felt like we ourselves were in compassion fatigue. We're going to talk about some of the signs of compassion fatigue. We're going to talk about who gets it We're specifically going to hone in on the role of social media and how that affects compassion fatigue, what leads to it, and then some coping strategies. So that's where we're going. This will be a three-part series because there's so much to be discussed, and it's a heavy topic, but it's a needed, necessary topic, especially for those giving their lives away in mentoring.
I have to add some humor here just for a moment.
Yes.
Most of our episodes are standalone episodes.
Yeah.
Occasionally they're part one and part two and three.
Uh-huh.
As we were putting this together, we found there was so much material,
yeah,
so much to talk about. It would have caused me some stress. It would have caused me some fatigue trying to package this in
sure.
one episode.
Yeah.
So.
Okay, let's talk about another season in our lives when we know we were victims of compassion fatigue. In 2000, are those dates right?
That's right.
From 2000 to 2008, we were church planters in Norman, Oklahoma.
What does that mean to people who've never heard that before?
That means we're gluttons for punishment.
So I was a pastor, and that's where you started church from the ground floor.
Yeah. So we started with a family in our living room, and it grew to about maybe, I don't know, what, 50, 60 people.
Over the years, yes, I'm not
right.
for sure.
And so that's 50 or 60 people that you're feeling ultra responsible for. And that's 50 or 60 people when they have a life crisis they're coming to us for. And that's 50 or 60 people who all have their own set of challenges that we're trying to speak into and walk with. And we were experiencing some compassion fatigue. What did that look like?
Well, I will interject this at this point. Unfortunately, you and I were not taught. We were taught in a way, it wasn't, no one ever said this to us, but in the system we were in, here's what we received. As the leaders, you guys are responsible for all of it.
You do the work.
You are the ones to always lead.
Yeah, emotionally, spiritually.
In every way. And so we go into this with, pure hearts, and we would be worn out some days. We're trying to do it all. And unfortunately, you actually limit people's own abilities to help others.
And help themselves.
And help them in a church setting.
Right.
Oh, you're the leader. You're the one with the so-called credentials.
Mm-hmm.
That's a recipe. What's this called?
Compassion fatigue.
See? Compassion fatigue.
You were so fatigued, you couldn't figure out the name.
Here's an example. There was a mother and her, a single mother, mm-hmm. and her two children.
Mm-hmm.
And there was so much need. And guys, I was one of those growing up that way.
Sure.
Basically a single mother, five kids. And we'd go to church. I imagine some people looked at us and thought, there is no hope for this family.
Mm-hmm.
They are messed up, or this is complicated, because it was. But there was a single mother and with two kids, and there were just a lot of complicated family dynamics.
Mm-hmm.
Again, we took it upon ourselves. Every time the phone rang, mm-hmm. every time something happened, we were trying to be right there. We're responsible for this. The mm-hmm. rest of you go on home. We'll handle this.
Mm-hmm.
And it wears you out.
One of the things we thought of, why were we so wrapped up in this cycle of compassion fatigue? Well, we were feeling ultra responsible for the well-being, the spiritual health, the financial success, for people's family of really every single member that was not ours to take on. Thankfully, the Lord provided a woman who was a professional counselor, turned out to become a friend of ours. But we were having a particularly difficult situation with a church member. And Chris, you remember this? We had had it. We were at our limit emotionally and mentally.
This particular woman, and guys, this is not criticism. This is a fact of life.
Right.
Things happen to us, and we can share them. We don't share names.
Right.
But this woman had worn us out.
Yeah.
And again, I didn't realize I was being given compassion fatigue,
mm-hmm.
and there was much more to it. There was abuse involved as well. I'm talking mental and emotional abuse. But with that said, I go to a counselor thinking, mm-hmm. we're going to take care of this woman. And I began to explain to her what's going on. And it's interesting. The counselor said, Chris, I know this woman, by the way, but we're not going to talk about this, her problem.
Her issues.
Her
we're
issues.
Going to talk about your issue.
We're talking about your issue. And I said, what? And she picked up a book off of her desk, and it was called Boundaries.
Yeah.
And she said, we're not going to talk about that today.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, I'm not going to meet with you anymore until you, and she was kind, but very deliberate with me.
Yeah.
Take this book home, or she said, go buy the book and read it and then come back and talk to me.
Mm-hmm.
And what that did, it helped me to understand I had no boundaries with relationships for the most part. If you said it, I would do it. I was a good guy, trying to be a good guy. And
there's a need, we'll meet it.
Yeah, do everything we can and then some. because that's what we're supposed to do.
Yeah.
And I read that book. You and I discussed it many times. We were handed definitions of what healthy boundaries are.
Mm-hmm.
And went back and saw the counselor, and she helped us walk through that.
Right. We're going to get into that.
Right.
The next topic we're going to talk about, what are the signs of compassion fatigue? We've given some stories that kind of illustrate, and you didn't take a rocket scientist to go, oh, okay, we saw some signs. But again, according to the Canadian Medical Association, here are some signs of compassion fatigue. Feelings of helplessness and powerlessness. We certainly felt that in our era with church planting. Reduced feelings of empathy and sensitivity. Feeling overwhelmed and exhausted. Feeling detached, numb, and emotionally disconnected. Loss of interest in activities you used to enjoy. Increased anxiety, sadness, anger, inability. Physical symptoms like headaches, nausea, upset stomach, dizziness. Increased conflict in personal relationships. Neglecting your own self-care, withdrawal, and self-isolation. What kind of led to this podcast, we're going to go to some more signs.
This episode?
Yes. Was a couple of weeks ago, I got a text from a lovely friend that I love, care about, adore. And she texted me about a health concern, asked if I could pray. And you know what my first thought was? Oh, great. Something else I need to pray about and care for. And my response, I instantly just felt the Holy Spirit say, girl, you need to take care of some things. You're in compassion fatigue.
Well, number two, you read reduced feelings of empathy and sensitivity.
Yes.
You that's who you are. You have that.
Yeah.
But because you were in compassion fatigue, you went the other direction. It's like, oh, another thing.
Yes. I love and adore my friend, but my lack of empathy and sensitivity was like that light on the dashboard of my car going, girl, there is a problem. We need to recognize it. So let's look at the Boys and Girls Club again. Yes.
I want to interject something.
Yeah.
One on the list, this is physical symptoms like headaches, nausea, upset stomach, and dizziness.
Mm-hmm.
Several years ago,
mm-hmm.
we were living in Arizona. I say that just to give you a point of reference there. My position was so stressful. I hardly ever had any time off. My job description continued to grow, which was not fair. Much younger, and we just went with it. Well, that's mm-hmm. what we're supposed to do. I began having back problems.
Mm-hmm.
I'd never had back problems before. I was not overweight. I was underweight. Couldn't sleep well. But the back, I kept going to the chiropractor, and I thought, what was that? I really didn't have a back problem per se,
yeah.
Christina.
Mm-hmm.
It was stress on the body.
Right.
Compassion fatigue will show itself up in some strange ways.
And in that case, again, like we read according to the Canadian Medical Association, is oftentimes burnout and stress are sort of the left and right arms of compassion fatigue. And so just being aware of what this is and look for the signs. Going on from more signs from the Boys and Girls Club of America, mood swings, beginning to receive a lot of complaints about your attitude and performance from family, friends, work, colleagues, difficulty sleeping and nightmares, which you alluded to, physical and mental fatigue, difficulty concentrating, blaming others for suffering, feeling less productive at work and home. Those are just some signs. Now, if you're feeling some of these, are you in the middle of compassion fatigue? I don't know, but it's worth taking a look at. Now, let's look at who gets compassion fatigue.
Well, I just want to say we're almost 20 minutes into this episode,
mm-hmm.
and we're not even halfway through. There's so much.
Yeah.
So
we're taking our time.
Where do you want to go with this?
Yeah, we're going to talk about who gets compassion fatigue,
okay.
and that'll be the end of
Part one. Okay.
Yeah. So again, we did a Google search to sort of help us. Some of this is from Psychology Today. They say people whose professions lead to prolonged exposure to other people's trauma can be vulnerable to compassion fatigue, also known as secondary trauma. So professionals who are in prolonged exposures to people's trauma. So obviously people in nursing, doctors, that sort of thing. But we believe that that really fits into mentors, Will.
It could happen to teachers as well.
Yeah.
I'm thinking of a good friend who's a teacher, and the things she sees, her students going through.
Right. Leaders of any sort of organization, secular or faith-based, executives who are responsible for companies' outcomes. We have on here teachers, ministry leaders. And then this little side note where we're going to stop for, but anyone who scrolls on social media, one of the things that sort of led to my compassion fatigue is I became, and I say became because I'm doing a digital fast, but I became obsessed with everything that was going on in Israel. So I was ingesting news several times a day. I was also kind of being addicted to my social media feeds. And I have some people after the election who have very strong opinions about all kinds of topics. And sometimes they align with mine and sometimes they don't. And it would just cause me to be in an uproar. And so about 3 weeks ago, I knew that going into the season of Lent, I needed to do a digital fast based on my reaction to my sweet friend's text. I knew I was in the middle of compassion fatigue. So before we wrap up, anything else on anything that we've talked about?
Just want to clarify. So we are a mentoring podcast and we talk about various topics, but I want to encourage you, if you are a mentor and you're dealing with some compassion fatigue, you're very normal. Yeah. Don't stress about, well, I shouldn't be struggling with this. You're human. Mm-hmm. And so maybe you need a break. Yeah. Maybe you need a pause. Maybe you need a vacation. Maybe you just need to get away from everyone and just be for a little bit. If you're a mentee or your mentee is struggling with compassion fatigue, mm-hmm. what a gift you could be to that mentee by let's talk about that. What is happening inside your head?
Yeah.
What symptoms? Take this podcast episode. Mm-hmm. What are these symptoms that are in your life? And I want to help you if I can as a mentor.
Yeah. Yeah, so just to wrap up today, we talked about a couple of definitions. Then we gave some examples of times in our lives where we knew we were dealing with compassion fatigue. We talked about some signs and who gets compassion fatigue. Next time, we're going to jump right into the role of social media and how does that play into our compassion fatigue. As always, we thank you so much for listening to our podcast. We know you have lots of choices, so we thank you for the choice of watching or listening to us. Today's episode has been brought by Lori E. Kenny, CPA, for professional CPA advice for individuals or small businesses. If you're looking for a blend of personalized attention and professional experience, then Lori E. Kenny, CPA firm, is where you need to check. We will give her information in the comments. And again, thank you for listening to Real Life Mentoring Podcast.